Hey, this is Adam Richman from Food Network UK, and you are feasting your ears on the Hotspur podcast. Come on, you Spurs.
Welcome to a brand new Hot Spurs podcast. It is Tuesday, the 7th of April, 2020. My name is Steve in Leo C in Essex, and we've got all the way from Lanzarote, Richard Cracknell for My Spurs Journey. How you doing, Crackers?
Yeah, very good, Steve. Thanks for asking me on, and hello to everyone. Hope you're all keeping safe and well back there in the UK. And looking forward to answering some questions and defending my Spurs credentials for a little while. So, looking forward to this. Thanks for asking,
it's
mate.
It's going to be fun. Some of the other episodes have been superb. Really takes you down memory lane and different perspectives on different players and matches and what have you. Before we get into all the fun stuff, just very quickly, I thought it'd be quite interesting. You're in Lanzarote. In terms of the coronavirus, everyone's sick to the back teeth about it. But I thought it would be interesting to find out what the lockdown is in your neck of the woods, because obviously, you know, there is no end in sight really in England at the moment. We all hope that it'll be over in a month, 2 months, whatever. But if people keep going to the parks, as they kind of are still doing, we may have to go a bit more further into the lockdown. What's the status in Lanzarote, mate?
We're currently under the Spanish government's rule, as normally we're autonomous and governed by a Canarian government. But when they announce a state of emergency, that means any autonomous regions, the Balearic Islands, the Canary Islands, and the small area in North Africa that's ruled by Spain as well, goes back under to the rule of Madrid. So all those autonomous governments step down, and we're now ruled by them. The state of emergency was due to come in mid-March, on a Tuesday in mid-March, about the 17th and 18th, I think it was. And they announced that on a Thursday, saying, right, from next Tuesday, state of emergency. Come the Saturday night, in the results on Lanzarote, the Guard of Seville came in and literally about 10:30, went in en masse to all the results and went into all the bars, restaurants, and went, thanks very much, state of emergency, just turn the electric off on everybody. Get out, back to your hotels if you're a tourist, stay in your rooms. You're not allowed around the pool, not allowed on balconies, everybody indoors. And that was it. They just came in and absolutely locked the place down. And we're allowed out one person at a time to go and get medicines or essential shopping.
So that's different, because here you can go out with people in your household.
No chance. No, I'm not allowed to do that. If we go in the car, I have to go on my own, or the wife goes on her own to a shop to get your shopping or medicines. Exercising, you're allowed to go around 50 metres or so from your property with your dog to give them a small walk. And even then, if you come across the wrong officer, they could turn you around and send you back indoors. It's quite brutal, to be honest. They really have locked down, but it's worked. It is working. I think we have about 90 cases in total on the island out of a population of 151,000. And we've had no new cases for a couple of days. Sadly, we've had three deaths on the island as well. But in the big scheme of things, three deaths is a small number. You know, I know that's three people's, like, family members we're talking about. But, you know, taking the emotion out of it, statistics wise, it's, you know, it's not more because of the sort of very harsh measures. So when we saw that people were allowed to have an hour's exercise in the UK lockdown, we were like, wow, that's not a lockdown. That's like that's pretty much like freedom, really. Yeah, so
I don't think they've been specific on the hour either. I think they've just said do your normal exercise. I've been toying with how long I can go out for, and as the wife said, just use your common sense. That's something. I think that's what's going on. I live by the sea, luckily, but then again. There's probably more people down there on a Sunday than there is in the high street. So I'm desperately trying to avoid people when I go out for a little jog. But as you say, if I was in Spain or Canary Islands at the moment, people aren't allowed to go out for a jog even. They can walk the dog, but that's about it. Is that right?
Yeah, that really is about it. Yeah, they've been very, very, very harsh. You have to go to shops in your own municipality as well. There's seven different sort of boroughs on the island. They're called municipalities, and you're only supposed to go shopping within your own municipality. So if you pop down from where we are in Tanajo down to Arrecife, one of the, like, where the capital is, to one of the biggest supermarkets there, by right, if the police catch you doing that, they can stop you and you can receive a fine from anything between 300 euros and I think 30,000 euros for like harsh offenders. Yeah, and they are enforcing it as well. So
did you say you're not allowed on your balcony?
At the start of it, in the hotels, they wanted the holidaymakers to actually stay in their room. They didn't want them on balconies, and if people are really sort of, they've been a bit harsher in the resorts and the bigger towns with that. But I mean, if you're keeping it quiet and just sitting on your balcony a little bit out of the way in one of the side turnings or something, then, you know, you're not likely to come across their radar. But in the bigger towns and that, they are being, sometimes if certain sort of houses and that have been making a bit of a nuisance themselves or being a bit loud, the police have been turning up and telling people to actually go indoors fully, not even in your garden. So, it's been quite tough, but it's been working. So,
other question that I know people want to ask, because in some countries, I know I think in the Philippines, they have banned alcohol. Is alcohol banned?
No, thankfully not. I think that might be the last straw. If we got banned from alcohol, then it's been the one thing getting everybody through it here. Been interesting popping to the bins when you're allowed to make your trip to the bins with your rubbish bags. The amount of clinking of bottles there is as you drop your bag in. So I'm making my way for a nice bottle of Tanqueray gin at the moment, and for a little drink at the weekend. So drinking's not bad. I think they'd actually be rioting on the streets of Spain if they did, because they do like a drop out here.
Yeah, too right. Well, listen, good stuff. And the only other thing I wanted to just talk about was your amazing transformation, if you don't mind me saying. I met you a few years ago, full of character, if you don't mind me saying. And then something happened. I look on Twitter, and who's this goddess? Adonis. I mixed up God and Adonis combined. Who is this Adonis that I see before me? And yeah, amazing. Just talk me through what happened there with that amazing weight loss.
Well, I went from Adonna kebab to Adonis. I'm hardly that. So, well, at my biggest, I was 32 stone. I got up to at one stage. Wow. And I'm now down to 17. So, that's 15 stone in 3 years. I'll put myself forward to the NHS, who is in everybody's good books at the moment, as you can probably imagine, and went in for the weight loss surgery. So I had the bypass done, the gastric bypass, and went through about 3 months of counselling, because unless you get your head right, you're not going to get anything else right. So so I went for the counselling, and they pretty much sort of strip you down mentally and get you to sort of face your demons and build you back up again and get your head in the right place. Then you go in for the surgery. You have to show a certain commitment to weight loss before that, give them your surgery, and then away you go from there. So I know there's a lot of people that think it's a silver bullet, but the hard work really starts once you've actually had the op to maintain the weight loss. It's quite amazing. There's a lot of people that pay for the op to be done privately, and a vast number of those people actually put all their weight back on and more. They stretch the small pouch that you're left with because they haven't got their heads right, because you haven't had the counselling done. So you go in and you admit that you have an addiction to food, and like anything else, like drink, like drugs, and they teach you to recognise it, own it, and then you literally take it a day at a time, like an alcoholic, like a drug addict, like a gambler. But they say that food addiction is probably the hardest one to get over, because you can't abstain.
Yeah.
You can only just try and control it. You know, if you're a gambler, you ban yourself from the bookies. If you're a drinker, you throw all your drink away. But when you're a food addict, you've got no chance. You have to control it while still taking the drugs, so to speak. So, it's been quite the journey.
Yeah.
But the counselling and the op as well has helped, and 15 stone off and doing okay with it. So
with health and everything these days, you could have been in pretty big trouble, I guess, if you'd have been that size with all this going on.
Very, very much so. Yeah, even without all this going on, I wouldn't have made old buns. It's as simple as that. I'm 50 now. You can't be 32 stone, 50 years old. There's only one outcome from it, So that's... Yeah.
Well, great.
The facts. And, it's a good thing. So, not mad continued.
That's brilliant. Your podcast, just remind us what it's called.
When the Spurs.
Yes,
I vaguely remember it.
No, it's brilliant. You made it onto the Mishmash poster as well, which I have hanging on in my toilet. The Mishmash picture with all the thousands of different things to do with Spurs. You made it on there, as did the Last Word on Spurs. I haven't made it on there. I can't believe it. Bought the thing and didn't even make it on the poster.
They'll have to do a second edition and add you on then, wouldn't they? Yeah. So
you're on with Anthony Costa. How did you hook up with Anthony from Blue and get that podcast going?
If I remember rightly, somebody was after some plain white T-shirts that was signed by celebrities to auction off for a charity.
Yeah.
And they messaged me on Twitter and said, do you know anyone that you might be able to get a plain white T-shirt from, signed by them, and we can auction it off? So I said, oh, okay, leave it with me. So this is when I was back living in Essex, and I put a message out to a few people and picked a few up from the Only Way's Essex guys, and I'd sort of, not long before that, I'd noticed that Ant had followed me on Twitter, and I followed him back.
Yeah.
And so I messaged him and sort of explained what was happening. And he said, yeah, no problem. He said, if you want to pop round, I'm living in South, where he was in South Wilford at the time. So I popped round to knocked on his door where he was living. And so we got chatting on the doorstep. He signed the T-shirt, got chatting about Spurs, of course. And about 3 hours later and a couple of cups of tea, that was that. And he said, oh, Spurs are playing Wednesday night. And he said, do you fancy going for a couple of beers and watch him in a bar? I think he was away at Bolton. And I said, yeah, go on then. So we trundled off out, and one or two beers turned into five or six beers. that was that. We just sort of sat chatting, watched the game, and I think on about the eighth beer, like looking through one squinting eye, it was like, do you know what? Do you like Spurs podcast? Yeah. Should we do our own? Yeah, go on then. And that was that. So off we went, and the podcast was born from there. So blame the beer.
Oh, terrific! Yeah, and he's funny when he's on podcasts, and when he's on your one, obviously. He's very, very, he's very passionate and opinionated, isn't he? He doesn't hold back. He's a massive Spurs fan.
Yeah, massive, massive Spurs fans. Right. I know a lot of people think that, you know, TV, film and music stars and radio stars just attach themselves to a football club for, a little bit of cachet with man of the people, I follow a football team. But he is 100%. Spurs, always has been, always will be. I mean, he'll get in a real rage when things ain't going great. He properly feels it, like, you know, he's if we ain't had a great game, the full-time whistle goes, and then I'll get a phone call and he'll go, hey, what was that all about? I'm his go-to. It's like, yeah, we have proper post-mortems after, like, you know, and yes,
brilliant.
We really, really like lean on each other after games. So especially when things ain't great. So, but he's a top lad. It's like sometimes I'll get people come up to me and say, what's he like in real life? And I go, he's a good bloke. And then they go, no, really, really. And I'll go, come here, like, let me whisper. And they think I'm going to go, like, yeah, he's like this, he's that. And I go, he's actually a really nice bloke. So people are like, really? He said, yeah, I'm telling you, if Ant was a plumber from Barnsley, I'd still be pals with him. Like, you know, never mind what he does for a living. He's just a good, genuine lad. And a proper Spurs fan. So, that's the story of the pod. So, not done one for a good long while, but who knows? We appear out in the mist like Brigadoon every few years, don't we? So,
well, I've still got you on subscription. So, whenever you do release one, it pops up on my iTunes. And that's the same with this podcast, of course. If you go to your podcast, hit subscribe, these shows will pop up. I'm hoping to do a few more over the next few weeks, because they've been really good fun to do. Just let's briefly, really, really briefly touch on the furlough thing. For me, I'm kind of just abstaining a little bit because I want to see how this pans out. Obviously, Liverpool said they were going to do it, then they're not, so the pressure's all on Spurs. I've never seen a balance sheet. I don't know how to run a big business. I don't know how to run a football club, and I don't know how to run a football club in a coronavirus. So many experts, so many people do, all these ex-footballers coming out of the woodwork telling Spurs what they should do. Most Spurs fans, I haven't actually seen anybody defending Enoch, and I'm certainly not defending Enoch or Levy. I think what they've done is a PR disaster, and it looks on the face of it absolutely awful. Although I'm not going to condemn them 100%, you know, because A, we haven't got anyone else that wants to buy the club as far as I know at the moment, and B, it might pan out in different ways. So I'm just reserving at the moment. What do you think, Crackers?
Yeah, I think you've hit a fair note with that, really. On the face of it, it looks like, you know, there you have a billionaire owner and a multimillionaire chairman and a board, but you know, relying on a government to for money. And you think to yourself, well, you know, maybe that money would be better taken by smaller companies rather than these big multi-million pound businesses. But as you say, we don't know if they're actually allowed to put money in that way due to the financial fair play rules. As you say, balance sheets, on the face of it, it looks like a multi-billion pound company that runs it. But, you know, that might just be on paper. You don't really know. But whichever way it cuts up, it has been a PR disaster. It's been an absolute disaster. I mean, Daniel Levy's statement the other day when he announced it was just so off key. It just, there was no humanity to it at all, seemingly. It just seemed very cold, very calculated, very, this is the way it is, blah, 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 boom, there you go. It's, and the problem you've got as well, fans still see clubs as a hub of a community and not businesses. Football is just such an ingrained part of society. They're almost like a school or a hospital or a church within towns, you know. They are part, they're that much ingrained. The football club is just part, and, you know, people still see it as that way. And when things like this happen, you sort of look towards your churches, your hospitals, your schools, to all muck in for the community. And we still see clubs in that way, but they're not. They are big businesses with ruthless businessmen running them that don't become billionaires by being humanitarians as such, do they? It's a very, very difficult one. But on the face of it, if they are allowed to pay the staff out their own pockets, then please do so. You know, if you're a billionaire and a millionaire owner of a club, and the rules allow you to pay out of your own pocket to these people, then, like, it would be nice to think that they would. And all the other clubs seem to be finding a way. So, you know, Spurs, please do so as well. But if they're not allowed to, and if there's more devil in the detail as to why they've had to, then, yeah, you're right to sort of reserve a bit of judgment on it. But similar theme, what's really annoyed me is the way that as soon as anything terrible happens, then the actual footballers themselves are told, what are you doing? Like, why, you know, you should be donating 50% of your wages to the NHS. You should be doing this as football, you know, like somebody pointed out at yesterday. Troy Deeney's not responsible for running the NHS, or Jan Vertonghen, or Harry Kane, or, yes, I said, you know, Troy Deeney, because that was the person they used yesterday, the thought of Troy Deeney running the NHS. It's not down to footballers. And people go, oh, they're still taking their 200 grand a week. There's so many of them that week in, week out, when we're not having issues like the coronavirus, are running charities, are funding schools, are doing stuff for projects and that. So many of them do loads and loads of charitable work anyway, you know. And so, but it's always footballers and football that becomes the go-to punch bag for anything going wrong in society. And that just annoys me. It's not down to them. You never see film stars, TV stars, pop stars getting the same kick in that football and footballers do. And yes, it's tough times, and, you know, I hope Spurs do something about this, because, you know, it's caused a lot of ill feeling. If they are able to, then they really should. So,
That's absolutely right, and that is the point. If they are able to, they should. On the footballers thing, I know, you know, they're damned if they do, damned if they don't. If they do something wonderful for charity, then and they put it on their Facebook or their Twitter, it's, oh, look at him showing off, trying to be a hero. You know, Adebayor is one. I think he donates tremendous amounts back to Africa. Drogba, I think he practically runs cities, that are not cities, like villages, didn't he, with the contributions, correct, and things. So anyway, let's lighten it up a little bit now, Crackers. Start with some nice questions here. Some are easier than others, all right, but some are going to get you thinking. Okay. Here's the first one. Who is your favourite football club?
Tottenham, of course.
Yes.
Tottenham Hotspur.
Correct. What's your favourite country?
Oh, that'd have to be Lanzarote now, wouldn't it? I'll be expelled if I didn't say that. No, a place that's really captured my heart. Love it here. Yeah, it's fantastic.
Tell us something that you love about Lanzarote.
I like the old-fashioned sense of society here as well. It's like an heart back to the old days, and it's just nice. There's a nice sense of society, nice sense of community. They're lovely, lovely people, the Canarians. If they can help you out, they will, and it's really nice. They're very, very welcome. To people from overseas just trying to make themselves a life here. So, and the weather helps as well.
Weather and bottles
of beer at about 20 pence each. all things that help.
Lovely. Right, going to get dark now. Which football player do you dislike the most?
Oh, man, what a question. I tell you who I hate the most, because I have a begrudging respect for him as well as a footballer, is Thierry Henry.
Yeah.
And I remember being at Highbury that day, he just run through us like a knife through butter and scored that goal and slid to his knees. And he broke my heart, but what a player as well, you know, taking me Spurs hat off.
Yeah.
I hated him because he was so, so good. He was, I hated myself for actually liking him as a footballer, but it was just for them. If he was with us, wow. You'd have paid money just to see him alone, you know. And so I think Thierry Henry I probably hate the most.
Yeah, I have that that last season when Van Persie played for them and then went to Man United. I just used to watch him through my fingers because he was absolutely magnificent, and I used to hate it. But
So
what football terrifying. Club do you dislike the most?
Do you know what? I don't think it's Arsenal, actually, because I mean, in this huge circus of football that football now is, they tried to do the right thing in building the club when they moved to the new stadium, and they didn't. So I mean, I know they have rich owners and that, but they didn't do it via the old money or, you know, a Russian who can't spend too long in open spaces. And, they try to do things that way. And you have a begrudging respect for your enemy.
Yeah.
I think it used to be West Ham, because I grew up around Romford, and that's a real, real West Ham stronghold. And
yes,
back when I was at school, they used to have a real Indian sign over us. They always seemed to like get one over on us and beat us. And I used to get dog's abuse at school from the West Ham boys. There was only a couple of Spurs lads in the school, and I really used to get it from them. So I think it was them, but now I think it has to be Chelsea, to be honest. What a horrid, horrid club. Just like, you know, there's a few of them fans I get on with, a lot of the older ones, but some of the younger ones, awful club, just awful. So, I think Chelsea.
Yeah, just on the West Ham thing, I've always said it, I like when you're at a party or you meet someone and they're a West Ham fan, as long as you don't tell them you're a Spurs fan, leave that for later. But they to me, they're knowledgeable about football, not just their club, passionate. I worked in Dagenham for several years, and the number of West Ham fans in the area and that whole of Essex, really, all the way down here to Southend, in a way, they're a little bit of a sleeping giant. If they can sort themselves out, they've got a potential because of the lack of Premier League clubs in this area. They can, you know, if they sort themselves out, they could have the whole of Essex, really, getting up to that stadium. But fortunately, we see ourselves as a shambles at times, but my goodness, don't they get things wrong.
when we're a shambles, West Ham are like, hold our beer and watch this, and they just...
Yeah.
He just always managed to knot it up and at least knock us off the number one spot for an Omni Shambles, didn't they? So long may it continue. So, but you're right about the fans. They remind me of Spurs fans. It's weird because if you're sort of Spurs, West Ham, Arsenal, the three bigger clubs of north of the river in London, northeast London, and West Ham Spurs fans, very similar mentalities and senses of humour and then you come across Arsenal fans, and even though you grew up with them and around the same streets and around the same people and the same culture, they're like a different breed, aren't they?
They are. They don't watch the games.
They just see everything differently. You said, no.
You go, do you watch United Liverpool last night? No, I only watch Arsenal. What? So we watch games, knowledgeable about all football. Arsenal haven't got a clue.
No, I tell you something else as well with Arsenal fans. If they're playing, if they're live on TV, and you know, I've got to be somewhere or do something and need to be out and not watching, I can guarantee you, if you go into a supermarket, there'll be a chap walking round doing his shopping in an Arsenal shirt, and you just think to yourself, man, what? You're on telly at the moment, live. You're playing Sheffield United or something, and you're in here shopping. It's like you've gone out and spent like 100 quid on a shirt. You ain't even watching them. They're on live at the moment. I guarantee it's just bizarre. They are bizarre people.
I'm with you on that one. Who's your favourite ever player?
Glenn Hoddle, without doubt. There you go. Glenn Hoddle for Spurs. And I'm very blessed to do some work with him from time to time on the Q&A nights. And even though I'm a 50-year-old man, every time I meet him, I'm like a 14-year-old girl meeting Justin Bieber. Every time, I can't. Just in awe of him. Just in utter awe of him. And I just, as a kid, absolutely idolised him. He was just, if you're... I always say that, you know, this Earth's billions of years old, and I've been lucky enough to live on it whilst David Bowie sung songs and Glenn Hoddle played football. You know, it's, special, unbelievable, and a really, really lovely bloke as well. Really, really great. Tells a great story on a Q&A night, and, really in awe of him. Unbelievable footballer. So blessed to have been able to see him in the flesh.
Fantastic. And I know some of those Q&As, I've heard him on the Spurs show and different things. And for someone like him, sometimes I think he's going to hold back on his stories, sort of, oh, he's told this, you know, the Watford goal story, the Oxford goal story, but he doesn't hold back, does he? He gets full into it. He goes, so the ball come over, because his favourite goal, as he says, is the Man United goal. Where he volleyed it. So I had a chat with him once, and I said, "No, your best goal was the Oxford goal." And he said, "No. It's the Man United. Ball came over. I've gone to, and he's got into that position." And I'm like, "This is brilliant." I said, "Yeah, that's all very well, but no, it's the Oxford goal." And he's like, "So he's absolutely fan. He's bang up for those nights, isn't he? He really gets into them, and he doesn't hold back."
No, he's fantastic. Yeah, he's a great, great storyteller. Speaks really well, and it's very, very sad that he's not still managing a team or doing something in a team in some capacity, because his knowledge of the game, his reading of the game, his ability is just incredible. And I think if he hadn't have had the rug pulled under him at Spurs, and he'd got one or two players that he actually went after but wasn't backed for him, I think it could have been a very, very different story for Glenn at Spurs. And I mean, when he came as a manager, and then there's that famous picture of him and Bill Nick together out on the pitch, and that is like, wow, you know, that's what you want to see, is that type of thing, you know. It's just, he really deserves to be at the coalface of football and not just talking about it on BT Sport, to be honest. It's, it's tragic, really.
Who's your favourite ever manager?
Oh, wow. Keith. Has to be Keith Birkinshaw.
Yeah.
He was the manager I grew up with. Made me fall in love with a club. Was the 81 and 82 team. Was dealt an awful hand when he first came in, and the relegation, stuck with it, rebuilt the club, and obviously went on to the glories that he did. And Keith, really, yeah, has to be Keith. I liked
the,
my.
You at the 84 final?
I wasn't. No, never got a ticket for it. Remember watching it on telly at home with my mum and dad, and watched that on the TV. And that's one. I think that might be one game I wish I could have attended, to be honest.
Brilliant. And who? Right, this one is legendary player, so not necessarily for Spurs.
Yeah.
Or it can be, but who comes to mind when I say a legendary player?
Ronaldinho was the greatest player never to play for Spurs. Just as you go back and just look at some YouTube films of stuff he could do, he was 110% a Tottenham player that never was. Could you imagine if he was at Spurs? Because we've always loved a bit of a flash Harry, but who could actually, somebody that gets you off the seat rather than a flash Harry. And wow, I mean, he's Ginola, who I loved as well, but he was Ginola times 10, wasn't he? You know, things he could do. And, I would have loved to have seen Ronaldinho playing for Spurs. What a thing that would have been. He was just, football's about going to be entertained, getting off your seat, and blah, blah, all this, like, you know, well, firstly, it's about, you've got to win, and no, it's not. It's about going, enjoying time with friends and family, catching up, going with dad and lads and things like that, and then being entertained. You know, it's like, one of my favourite ever Spurs games was when we went up to Sunderland a few years, probably about 8 to 10 years ago. I think we got beat 4-3, 4-3-2. I think it might have been Darren Bent scored a penalty against us when he was at for Sunderland in about the first 5 minutes. Gomez gave a penalty away. What unbelievable game. Absolutely unbelievable. We lost, but I came out of that game thinking to myself, what money's worth I've had from that, you know, my ticket. It's an unbelievable backwards and forwards game. So no, I don't know, maybe I'm an odd-bod, but I don't always think winning is a thing. And, you know, you want to be entertained. And Ronaldinho just had that in bucket load. So, he's a legend for me.
Who's your favourite ever goalkeeper?
Pat Jennings. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, unbelievable goalkeeper. And just introduced things like saving with his legs into sort of the UK domestic game. And, yeah, unbelievable career. And, you know, if you can walk onto the pitch at half time at the Emirates and get a rapturous reception, and then the next week walk onto the pitch at White Hart Lane and get the same, I think that tells you all you need to know about Pat. Not only as a player, but as a man as well. So definitely Pat.
I mean, the man's principles. We won't go into the story, but you know the story of why he joined Arsenal, and never compare the two with the other fella that left to join Arsenal, because this was purely on principle. Didn't want to go to Arsenal, wasn't interested in going to Arsenal, but absolutely got snubbed by Tottenham, and literally went to Arsenal to spite the hierarchy at Spurs. Only to come back 8-9 years later to rapturous applause because he did no wrong. Unbelievable, that story.
It is terrible. He tells it so well as well, you know. And you can see the pain still to this day when he speaks of that and his decision to go and how much it hurt. And it still hurts him today, but be under no illusions. If you was to put a gun to Pat's temple and ask him Spurs or Arsenal, I know which way he'll answer it. Don't worry. He's a Tottenham man through and through. And
I've been lucky enough to be with him with his wife telling that story. And she's sitting there going, oh, this is all word for word. Absolutely, he was never going to join them. And that basically, the punchline is he got home and said, give me that. Was it Terry Neill who'd gone to Arsenal? And he said to his wife, Eleanor, give me Terry Neill. We've still got Terry Neill's number. Give it to me. I'm joining Arsenal. And she's looked at him and gone, what? What on earth's happened? So anyway, go and search out that story, guys, because it is absolutely unbelievable. Just moving on then, Crackers. We're having fun, but we've got to get through these questions. Who's your favourite ever defender?
Graham Roberts. Graham was just he was hard as nails, as he says in his biography. Unbelievable defender. But he would die for the cause. But he wasn't just a hard man either. Graham could play not just a little, but a lot. He was a very, very cultured footballer. But then he could also kick Charlie Nicholas into the stands when he needed to. So he was a great, great combo. As a defender, Graham was fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. Yeah,
Well,
loved Graham.
just look at the way he took the goal in the UEFA Cup.
Yes,
You know,
yeah.
what composure to do that.
It was, he could have been smashed to bits trying, but there was only ever going to be one winner of that ball to smash it into the net when he scored, you know, and brilliant, brilliant,
Brilliant
loved him.
stuff. Who's your favourite ever midfielder?
Oh, wow. Has to be Glenn. Really has to be Glenn, yeah. So just add everything. Like Paul Miller always says, feet like a set of golf clubs, you know, could just everything, chip, long, short, the whole lot. Just add everything. If you get a chance, I'm pretty sure it was a game Spurs played when the new West Stand opened in the old lane. And Glenn puts a ball over for Steve Perriman to run on. Onto. And as the ball drops in front of Stevie Perriman, it actually backspins about 3 or 4 foot and just falls straight into Steve's stride. I mean, just like, wow, unbelievable. He was, definitely Glenn.
He'd look, these are the stories, he'd look up, see who he's passing it to, and hit the ball into the path of the player. Specifically for them. So if he's hitting it to Garth Crooks, he's putting top spin on it because he knows he's going to run onto it. For someone else who's a bit slower, he's going to put a little bit of backspin on it because he knows they're going to. It's going to. But he used to hit the ball for the specific player where they're going to run onto
Wow.
it. Perfect. I mean, just incredible. Love that.
Can you imagine how much Glenn would be worth today?
Yes.
I just like just off the scale, just incredible, just
Wow.
absolutely
And you can't
incredible.
compare
So,
him to anybody of today, can you? With
no.
most players, you can go, oh, they're a bit like him. They're bl-. You can't actually think, oh no, he's similar to Hoddle. You just no way with the range of
No.
passing.
No, absolutely, absolutely peerless, and just a shame he played in the time he did, you know, criminally underused by England. Platini, for all his faults, was bang on when he said, you know, we in France we'd have built the team around him, and he'd have had, you know, 100 plus caps. I think he ended up with 53, was it? And just woefully underused internationally. So Glenn in midfield.
Who's your favourite ever striker?
Boy, there's a toughie. There is a real toughie. I mean, Greavesy, I never saw in the flesh, but I've seen YouTube clips of him and that, and you know, my dad, who never waxes lyrical about anyone. And you mentioned Jimmy to him, and like he goes all misty-eyed, like you know, he was just. Just unbelievable. Another player just completely ahead of his time. I think from players I saw, I loved Jürgen. Jürgen was just unbelievable, and the whole story, and you know, him sort of coming, and the way he joined, and his goals at Sheffield, and that was just just fantastic. I loved watching Jürgen. What a player he
Do you
was.
Remember
He
where
was.
you were when you heard he'd signed?
I think in my bedroom, I think, and somebody, I can't remember who it was, just dropped a newspaper on my bed and went, have a look at that. And it was like, no way. No, it was like, is it April the 1st?
Did you do a merry jig?
You just like, nobody had a clue until it. Oh, it's just like, couldn't believe it. Just could not believe that we'd actually managed to pull off a player like Jurgen Cumming. It was just disbelief, absolute disbelief.
I mean,
and
for the younger fans, it was literally like, maybe Messi and Ronaldo is a little bit of a stretch, but certainly in Mbappe, you know.
Yes,
this is the number, or Lewandowski.
Probably, I was just about to say Lewandowski in his pomp.
Yeah, probably not even.
Yeah, like, you know,
the Lewandowski. He was literally the best, and he just had a brilliant World Cup, where, by the way, me and my dad had sat through every Germany game going, I bloody hate that Klinsmann. And then he goes and scores. Then he goes and signs. And I was in Spain, and my God, did me and my dad dance around that the front room in our house in Spain. But
when he actually done the dive as well, I mean, you know, oh hello, it's actually a funny German as well.
Yeah, he was terrific.
Hackney-eyed thing of Germans not being funny, like, you know, and he just played on that. So he totally got sort of British humour as well and bought into being with the lads in the dressing room. And, yeah, the whole thing around Jurgen was just fantastic, absolutely brilliant.
I remember it. We played against Sunderland away in the FA Cup and it was on telly. And they'd won 4-0 or 4-1 something. There was it. Then him and Sheringham were being interviewed afterwards. And the interviewer said, what about the conditions in Sunderland? He said, oh, yeah, yes, it's very, very windy. And then Teddy Sheringham immediately went, windy? Windy? And they're like taking the mickey out of him. But again, it showed he was laughing, and it showed he really bought into Tottenham. What's the first match you ever remember seeing as a kid?
Oh, would be my first as a kid. It wouldn't actually be Spurs, because my mum's side of the family's got a huge history with Leighton Orient. So my mum was the ticket office manager and secretary to the club secretary, Peter Barnes, who actually ended up as Spurs' club secretary. So she was secretary to Peter Barnes. And George Petty, the manager, and she ran the ticket office. She had about 12 hats that she wore. My nan was the tea lady at Brisbane Road for about 20 years. So she used to make teas and that for all the players and officials. And she was a proper dyed-in-the-wool old East End girl. And so she'd say, oh, that Brian Moore was at the O's today, because they were like second division, so they sometimes get on the telly. Oh, he's lovely. She'd go, oh, I love Brian Moore, he's lovely. And then she'd go, oh, that bloody Jimmy Hill was at the O's today. Oh, he's horrible, man, he is. He's so full of himself. So, so a massive sort of family history with Orient, and always remember as a kid people like Laurie Cunningham being at my nan's house, and because she's literally a free kick away from Brisbane Road and from the ground. And yes, Laurie Cunningham being about, and Glenn Roder and John Chidozie, and so my
first game would be
memories of really being at Brisbane Road. Yeah, we'd be an Orient game, but literally, I couldn't tell you it, because it just used to be there every week, you know, around the dressing rooms and sort of, you know, around all them sort of areas, just with my family. My uncle was the match day announcer there as well in the DJ booth. So, but first Spurs game was 76 with Birmingham at home, and we lost 2-1. So there was a good introduction to a life of misery, wasn't it? So first game of the lane, that was.
Is there a football match that's made you cry?
There is one from the distant past, and then one quite recent. The first one would have been the Milk Cup final or League Cup final against Liverpool, when we were 1-0 up, and then they got back to 1-1 with, was it Highway scored on about 85 minutes, and then they went on and to win it. I went to Wembley, came home, and then cried my eyes out when I got in. And my mum went, "You're all right, boy." And I got home, and oh, that was it. The tears started. I'd held it together until then, until I saw my ma and lost it. And my dad was like, "That's it. East Spurs, good stuff." Like, he's cried over them. He's proper Tottenham now. That was that. And then when we beat Ajax to get through to the final as well, I mean, just like the whole emotion of that at the final whistle, I just lost it, absolutely lost it. I think it was just joy, relief, and everything. The emotion of that night was just wow. You know, it's like if people that say, "Oh, I don't like football," I think to myself, like, poor you, you know, because when something's getting to you that much, you know, it just pulls on your emotions that much. What a feeling, you know, people would have never experienced that. I do feel sorry for, and yeah, that night in Amsterdam. Oh, wow. I remember some tears from that one as well. And probably 2 days on the lass in Amsterdam as well. Didn't help as much either. I was quite tired and emotional from quite a lot of Amsterdam's finest bars.
Yeah.
Combination of everything.
Combination, brilliant. I love it. What about the funniest match you ever saw?
I think the funniest thing I ever saw a match was Spurs versus Man City a few years ago at the old White Hart Lane. And Spurs were 1-0 up, and City were really, really pressing us for an equaliser. And it was about 85, 86 minutes in. And I was sat in block 31, the lower side there, just in that corner, bottom of the the shelf side. And the ball's gone out of play, and it's landed in the lap of a chap about five rows behind me in the lower tier there. And Dietmar Hamann's come running over, beckoning for the ball, because they're obviously trying to chase this equaliser. And the chap stood up with the ball in his hands, and he's gone to Dietmar, "Your papers? Show me your papers! Your papers!" He's screaming at him, "Show me your papers!" And just holding the ball, and even Dietmar Hamann started laughing, like, you know, this bloke just holding this football, screaming, "Show me your papers," to Dietmar Hamann, which probably doesn't sit too well with maybe some of the race relations boards, but it was probably the funniest thing I have ever seen at football. That was just unbelievable.
And what's the worst match you ever saw?
Oh man. Probably the League Cup semi-final when we were all but through and then got beat by Arsenal. And they went through to the final. That was a real punch in the guts. That was just awful. That was really bad. And there was a few stinker games as well under AVB as well. There were some games I just got to about 50, 60 minutes, and I went, "Oh, you know what, this is breaking my heart. I can't watch Spurs play like this. This is just, like, it's killing me."
Yeah.
And it just up and gone. I just couldn't face watching a team that's, you know, giving you Ginola and Gazza and Hoddle and teams, and just watching a team absolutely huff and puff and just doing nothing.
Yeah.
Absolutely
nothing.
Do you know,
that reminds me. Me and Colin, when we used to do the show during the AVP, that was what we used to say each week. Well, what did you think, Carl? We basically say, "Well, there's a lot of huffing and puffing, but that's about it."
Yeah, yeah.
That phrase,
yeah,
huffing and puffing, we used to say every week.
Like I said before, I'm a weirdo. If Spurs have actually tried to entertain and get beat 1-0, I'll be fine with it. If we go and win a game 1-0 and it's been sideways, moribund, bland crap, I won't be happy. I just, like, I'm not happy with that. I want to be entertained. And results secondary for me. So yeah, some of those AVB games were just dreadful.
Have you ever been at a match and been scared?
Yes, Yeah, a few times, but not a Spurs game, funnily enough. A friend of mine, a big Wolverhampton Wanderers fan, and they were away at Millwall at the Old Den a good few years ago, and he got some tickets.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, come with me, come with me, come on. So I went, all right, then let's go. And that was terrifying, to be honest. They are absolutely terrifying. Walking into a pub which had signs up saying family friendly, blah, blah, blah. So we've gone in there to get a drink, and the barman spying my mate's old gold shirt underneath his jacket.
Yeah.
And the volley of abuse that he gave us to get out. And I mean, family with kids screaming stuff like, you know, we just about got out of this pub. And these were like mums and dads with kids of like 8, 9, 10 years old. And, you know, just the absolute hatred. It was, yeah, that was scary. That was very, very scary, especially afterwards, because you used to come out the away end and up an old, like, little alleyway.
Yeah.
And there was a load of walls there. But when you got to the end of the alleyway, everybody turned right to get back onto the coaches to go back up to the black country.
Yeah.
And about half a dozen people just walked out onto the roadway to make their way back to the station. And it was only away fans that really used to come out of that alleyway. So everybody milling about knew you was an away fan. And that was a bit sinister as well. There was a lot of things being said. Ed and that was quite terrifying.
Get away as quickly as you can. Get out of trouble.
Yeah, yeah.
Two more to go, Crackers. Is there a player that everyone says is rubbish, but you go, no, I quite like him? A player that you can think of that you've had to defend all these years?
I don't know about one player per se, but I've always judged Spurs fans on certain players. So there was people that always used to say, oh, Waddle, like, no, not for me. You ever seen him? He walks around with his shoulders slumped and he don't look like he's bothered. And then there used to be the fans that would go, Waddle, brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And then they were like it with Michael Carrick. There was people that went, nah, Carrick, not for me, don't do enough. So you do not watch him. Like, he's unbelievable. Mm. And then that happened again with Luka Modric. How many people used to moan about Modric?
Yeah.
Oh, he can't do enough. He's this, he's that. And I say, like, are you watching a different game to me? He's unbelievable. And then, like, he went to Real Madrid and just ended up being their best player for about 3 years running. He was just like, the Madrid fans absolutely loved him, loved him to bits. And, yes, there's always been those players who's divided opinion. I'll tell you, probably as one player would be Mark Falco.
Oh.
And he used to get so much stick up front. Oh, Falco, no, not for me. But I tell you what, he, another man, Tottenham through and through, all his life, always has been, always will be, proper Tottenham. And when he got called into the team, when, you know, either Crooks or Archibald wasn't available, and then Brazil came in as well, he stuck with Spurs. He was always there for him. He came in and he'd always do a fantastic job, even though he was never top of the pecking order and could have gone other places before he did actually go. Brilliant. Like, brilliant goal against Bayern Munich in the UEFA Cup run, and fantastic, fantastic player. Really, really good servant to the club. Hugely underrated and hugely underappreciated. So I think as the one would be Mark Falco.
Fantastic. Right, well, final question. Someone comes over from a tribe in Papua New Guinea and says to you...
Lanzarote.
What's this football I've been hearing about? And you've got a DVD of one game. You say, well, watch that. This is football. What match are you going to give that chance?
Oh, hey, what a question. What a great question as well. Does it have to be a Spurs game?
No.
Or...
no.
Do you know what? It's a tough choice between the essence of football would probably either have to be the Liverpool Newcastle 4-3 game,
yeah,
which was just off the scale. I mean, that had everything that you'd want from a football game in it. Or again, I suppose it would have maybe the Ajax Spurs game from the semi-final.
Yeah.
What a game that was. Or, oh God, 81 Cup Final replay as well.
Yeah.
Just like that whole story with Ricky going off in the first game and then, you know, being the star of the second game, real Roy the Rover stuff. Pick any one of those three. Yeah. God, I'll tell you what, I'll go with, because it's the Spurs thing, I'll go with the 81 Cup Final replay. It's just had a bit of everything in it, didn't it? You know, had the whole Roy the Rovers. You know, it's any game that was more or less, you'd go, well, you know, you could actually make a Hollywood movie about that would do. And an 81 replay, certainly that. So, 81 replay.
Fantastic. All right, mate. Well, look, I mean, that's been a fantastic hour. These are only supposed to be half an hour programs, but we've managed to chat for an hour there because we're, you know, like you say, with when you get chatting to people like Anthony Costa and fellow Spurs fans, you just love it so much, you just can't stop, and then something else you remember, and something else you remember, and that's how it goes, isn't it?
Yeah, very much is. Yeah, apologies if I've waffled on too long.
No, it's great stuff.
But listen, right, it's been a quick trip down memory lane, and some brilliant questions. I've really, really enjoyed that. It's a brilliant format, and good stuff. So I hope people enjoy it as much as I did doing it. So thank you very much.
Is it gone 12 o'clock in Lanzarote now?
Yes, it certainly has.
You can have a little drink there on the balcony, as long as you don't make too much noise.
I can hear the clinking of glasses already. Yeah, it's over the yard arm and all that. So, I'll be away. Good stuff. So, stay safe, stay well, everyone, during these crazy old times.
Yeah. All right, matey. Thanks ever so much.
Cheers, then. Thanks, Steve.
See you later. Cheers. Bye.
Come on, Spurs.
By the lakeside, just south of Didcot, I spied an angel just standing there. She was a traveller.